Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to another episode of Shipping and Handling. I'm your host, Jennifer Redden.
And I'm your co-host, Bridget Smith.
So it's been a while.
Yep.
Some shit's happened.
Yeah. The whole world is on fire, as it will soon quite literally be.
President Trump might be starting a war before he's even, inaugurated.
Yay.
I don't like to make assumptions about our readership, but just know that we have no interest in being at all polite to the elected president, because he is a garbage fire, and this whole thing is a travesty.
And all the people who keep saying, we need to respect him because he's going to be president.
Nope! Nope!
I will give him exactly as much respect as he showed to people like me during the campaign.
Which and that his supporters showed to fucking Obama.
Yeah.
Who is literal cinnamon world. Cinnamon bun. Too good for this world.
Yes.
Too pure.
Oh, I'm going to miss him so much.
I'm really going to be excited for, off the chain, post-presidency Obama, you know?
Yes, go take a nice long vacation, and then come back and start yelling.
Not too long.
Not too long. But he deserves it.
He definitely does.
He deserves a nice long vacation.
He deserves a break.
With his lovely family, who also deserve a nice break. And they should all go off to some, beautiful Caribbean island. And not talk to the press for a good month and a half, 2 months.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Ugh. Yeah, we don't even really have a topic for today because...
We
didn't record because we were busy, and then we didn't record because we were depressed. So, depressed and busy, which is the worst place to be.
Do you want to record, Jen? No.
No. I mean, it's tough. I mean, I think that the thing that I've been thinking a lot about in the last, month-ish since it happened. It just makes me think of Jay by Howard Jacobson that I read earlier in the year, where they refer to this event that was what happened if it happened. what I've been thinking a lot about is, I sort of go back and forth on whether or not, what I do matters. It does. Intellectually, I know this.
Yes.
But emotionally, I'm like, what the fuck am I doing?
Yeah.
I need to be battening down the hatches for the long winter.
Yes.
I don't know how I would do that. I don't know what a hatch is that what battening one would do.
Fun fact, I do know the etymology
of this term. Tell me, and then refill my wine glass.
So the hatches
I'm a glass behind Bridget because I spilled mine on my leg.
I refilled it. Hatches are basically the portholes and...
The ones they run the guns out of on tall ships?
Okay. Yeah. And battens are thin strips of wood that you nail over the hatches during storms so that the water doesn't get into them. So that's
cool.
What battening down the hatches is.
Cool. Good to know.
Yeah.
Fun fact, the the Vasa, the ship that I saw in Sweden in a museum, when it launched in 1628, it was the most expensive boat ever made for Gustavus Adolphus or something. And, when they were building it, they were just just put another deck on there. It's fine. Don't make it any wider or longer.
Oh, no.
And then they had all the guns run out because it was, its inaugural voyage. It sank 25 minutes into its inaugural voyage with, its entire crew aboard. And then it sat at the bottom of Stockholm Harbor for 300 years until they lifted it up out of the mud. And it's, surprisingly intact, but I was just good job, Gustavus Adolphus, you dummy.
There were a lot of really dumb ship developments in the era between we can float something and we're all going to go to war on our floating things. So one of my favorites is they in the age of sail, they were doing a lot of experimenting with the best way to kill other people, and cannons are a really good way to kill people on ships. So they were this whole thing where you have to roll it back, clean it out, load it in from the muzzle. It's so time-consuming. What if we put a hatch on the back and we can make breech-loading cannons?
Oh, God.
They,
had discovered gunpowder, 10 minutes earlier, right?
They had gotten gunpowder from the Chinese 10 minutes earlier.
I haven't thought about this when you're done.
But then they also decided that it would be better to be able to aim, so you don't have to pull up alongside the ship in order to shoot at it. You can point the cannon at it and fire. So now they have breech loading swivel guns, which have a tendency, when fired, to either explode from the back or spin around rapidly, knocking everyone who fired them off their feet. So I'm like, these guns probably killed more people who were trying to fire them than people that were being shot at.
Well, two thoughts. One, I rewatched Lord of the Rings, the whole thing, as one does when one is depressed and you want to look up, you want to think about hot elves and not becoming global superstorm.
The day after the election, I watched 10 Things I Hate About You and Clueless, so I feel you.
The siege of Helm's Deep, is it Helm's Deep?
Yeah.
Yeah, Helm's Deep. I was just like, how did Saruman invent gunpowder but not guns? I was like, where did he's like, I've got this cool black shit that when you light it on fire, it's gonna explode. And I'm like,
okay, what do you do next?
But also arrows, like what? And then they had that like great Olympic torch moment where like the orc is like running the torch through. Anyway, the other thought I had is I'm reading a book on the Spanish Civil War, and apparently the only country that was donating weapons to the people fighting the fascists, the Republic?
Future us?
Yeah. No, it was the Russians, the Soviets, but they were trying to get rid of all of their old, like, weapons that were from, like, other countries. Yeah, so, like, some of the... They call the artillery, like, the Siege of Catherine the Great, because it was stuff that was literally from, like, 1880.
Oh, my God.
And, like, I was just like, this is the most horrifying thing I've ever read.
Yes.
But, anyway, so, yeah, so I've been having a lot of feelings. I've mostly, you know, I've mostly come around to the, you know, my job does have merit. Mm. Like, yes, what I do is important. Art is especially important in times of crisis.
Yeah.
The thing that I sort of find myself increasingly thinking, though, is that, like, I worry that art is too important in times of crisis in that, like, I have been watching a lot of really garbage television in an effort to distract myself from everything. I don't know, like, what I'm going to do about that, but...
Yeah. I have just had the hardest time focusing all month. Like, I haven't been able to actually do anything or think about anything or, like, process information, anything.
I go in, like, spurts where, like, the other day I had a bunch of client manuscripts, like, sort of shorter ones, like, proposals and outlines and stuff, and I read, like, 5 of them in a day. Yeah. Because I was like, yes, I'm gonna get through stuff. And then the next day I was like, I'm exhausted from doing things. I'm gonna not do things.
Stare at the ceiling.
Yeah, and I actually, one of my clients emailed me and she's like, are you all right? And I was like, thank you for asking. I wasn't. Now I'm fine. I appreciate you bearing with me. Because it's, like, really tough, and I don't think that, like...
I have had 2 clients email me so far and be like, I haven't done anything this month. I am going to have, like... One of them had a self-imposed deadline to get me a revision by the beginning of December, and she was like, that's not going to happen, I'm sorry. I was like, I totally understand, no worries. The other one has a deadline at the end of December, and she's like, well, I haven't done anything yet. I think I can still do it. I'm gonna be fine.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Oh, my God. I just, it's so, it's disheartening.
It really is.
And I think that the thing that has been, you know, sort of toughest is, you know, all my, you know, black friends going like, yeah, you know, we are not entirely surprised by this because white people are garbage. And I'm like, that is true. I thought I knew that that was true, but now I really know that that is true. Like, great. I
didn't quite grasp the level of garbage.
I just sort of intellectually was like, it can't happen here. Like, surely not. And now we're going into, like, the Simpsons presidency. And I'm just like, this is not cool.
No. It's... And
I just really...
I think it would have been easier to process if it hadn't been such a shock, because the polling was just completely wrong.
Yeah.
Completely wrong.
Well, and,
and, you know, all of that checking of 538 for, like, multiple times a day for the months leading up to the election. And
didn't matter.
Didn't help. Didn't help at all.
Well, and the thing that makes me furious is, you know, people who are blaming Hillary, and I'm just like...
No.
Nope.
Shut your face. Go away.
Yeah. And honestly, like, we love all of you, but if you want to come into our mentions with, like... any kind of Bernie Sanders nonsense, like, you can leave that shit at home because I am not interested in hearing it. I say with love and affection, but leave that shit away.
Yeah.
You know, Bernie Sanders, who's you know, who ready to work with the new administration. Yeah. I'm like, where's your progressive demigod now? Good job. Good job, team.
He's just very much a single issue candidate. And everyone said that about Hillary, but, like,
The issue was that she was a woman, and they made that an issue.
Yeah.
And his issue was madness about money stuff. I don't even know, just yelling. Did you see the SNL sketch of, like, the fake, like, Monster Hunter show? You know, like, one of those, like, shows on, like, Discovery where they're, like, looking for, like, Bigfoot, and they're like, we're going in search for Hill. And it's, like, in the mountains of Chappaqua, like...
I really enjoy the whole, like, meme about she's wandering the woods lost and no one will give her directions. They all just want to stop her for selfies. She hasn't eaten in days.
or the, you know, Vanessa Bayer's character who's like, she looked like a woman who just needed some space, so obviously I chased after her. But, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it's really disheartening, but... The more I get disheartened, the more I have to remind myself, like, that's what they want. Yep. If you sort of give up, the terrorists win, kind of thing. Like,
Except the terrorists are coming from inside the house.
Terrorists are calling from inside the house. They are. It's true. That's the title of the episode right there. The terrorists are calling from inside the house. Oh, my God. I feel like I have nothing helpful at all to say to anyone.
I know.
Just, and honestly, okay, like...
Go ahead.
And, like, you know, talking about sort of, like, withdrawing and, you know, losing ourselves in, you know, mindless television is, like, you know, you and I have the luxury of doing that because we're cishet white ladies who, you know, are protected by a reasonable amount of privilege.
And also work in an extremely liberal industry where everyone sort of feels the same
But way. There are many people in this country, you know, on my client list in the world who do not have the luxury of withdrawing because they're the people who are now being targeted by fucking nightmare right-wing fascist crazy people.
So the question now is, what are we going to do about it?
What comes next?
Yes. Apart from making it a habit to call our congresspeople and various...
Those are fun conversations when I actually get through, you know.
Yeah.
I feel a little bit bad for all the people who work in those offices, but not really that bad. I'm just like, sorry, it's your job. But
welcome to government.
Yeah. This really reminds me of the second reprise of King George's song in Hamilton, where he's like... I imagine that he's now singing it to, like, the right wing, going, like, what comes next? You've been freed, so do you know how hard it is to lead? You're on your own. Awesome. Wow. Do you have a clue what happens now? Like, I don't think that Trump has the first idea of what to do.
No.
Like, and I...
And the thing that really scares me is I don't think he cares that he doesn't know.
He thinks it's a strength. The people who support him think it's a strength. So, I mean, I guess, you know, one thing that I'm sort of, that I've sort of been doing a lot in the last few weeks is sort of taking stock of the year, because the year feels like it's over.
Yeah.
Like, it's only December 5th, but it feels like it's straight up fucking over.
Yeah.
So I've been doing a lot of, like, stock taking of, like, what I did this year and how things went and, like, what I'm going to do next year and what I want and, like, stuff like that. So I don't know if you've been doing anything... Also, it's dark. It gets dark at like 4:30 now. It's
winter.
I was talking to one of my clients, and he's like, "It's been a little easier to bear out here in California because, like, when you're sad, you can just go surfing." I was like, "You're adorable."
Damn it!
Let's all move to California.
We sequester ourselves in dark bars. Yeah. One of the things, the thing I tweeted a couple days after the election, by the time I could actually process things that were not just rage and fear, and shame and sorrow.
Rage and Fear and Shame and Sorrow, the new album from The Cure.
So I suspect there's going to be a very large market for comedy and optimistic things in the next few years. And I would like to fill some of those holes, especially for the people who are going to be most hurt by this administration. So that's what I'm looking for. I'm going to try to put out books of optimism and strength.
Yeah.
Get people.
I was saying to someone the other day that I don't really like grim stuff. And then I was thinking about my list, and I was like, my list is really grim. Like, I don't have anything funny on my list. I mean, it's all, like, sort of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess Merle Lafferty is an exception, but technically I didn't sell her sort of, like, explicitly humorous books.
Yeah.
But, and she's got something in the works that I'm really excited about, but that's much more like upbeat and fun.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, yeah, I think that's a good, you know.
Yeah, because I know a lot of people are wanting things that are about defiance and, like, fighting. And I think that that is absolutely a valid thing that's going to be very valuable. But
I am looking, like, if anyone out there, here's my hashtag MSWL for, like, Lifetime. I want, like, the MASH of our times.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, that show was fucking funny as shit.
Yes.
And it was also very grim.
Yes.
But it was mostly funny.
Yes.
You know? I want that.
Yeah.
Send me that. In whatever form that takes.
Mm.
That's, I mean, I feel like every conversation I've had in the last month has just been sort of sitting in silence with people. Staring. Or, like, rage. Like, at Thanksgiving dinner, like, everyone was sort of on the same political, you know, side. Yeah. But this family friend of mine, Ronnie, bless his heart, was just, he was so mad and he was yelling. And we're all like, Ronnie, we're on your side. You don't have to yell. We agree with you. Please don't yell. We're all very upset. Please don't yell.
That was sort of how my Thanksgiving went as well. And, like, I'm so grateful for this because there were 21 people at my Thanksgiving.
Oh, my God. That's a statistical miracle that you didn't have to have a fight.
Well, actually, one we had, so most of them were related to me. And many of them I know for a fact are on the exact same political page that I am.
Yeah.
But also we had this family friend who's like, I can't go to my other branches, the other branches of my family this Thanksgiving because
garbage.
Because garbage. can we come to your house? And so my mom was like, of course, of course. So it was also a little bit of a self-selecting group.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, my mom banned all talk of politics because she was like, I know that we're all just going to get drunk and shout at each other about how terrible the world is, and I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
It's like, we're all going to be yelling at each other about the same things. Like, we're going to be yelling the same factoids back and forth.
Yeah.
Let's just not.
Yeah. Oy. Yeah. Sigh. Yeah. Well, so I guess, you know, in terms of wrapping up 2016, let's put it to bed because it's garbage and we hope
salt
the earth, you know, burn the bones, ring the thing with salt, you know, whole thing.
My favorite thing, my favorite tweet about this was 2016 managed to ruin even the hope for 2016 to end.
It's so true. That and, like, stop saying that it can't get worse because it totally can and it's taking this as a dare. Yeah. But, well, so let's try to think of some positive things. So what's the thing that you're, like, happiest or most proud about in 2016?
Here's the thing. I sold my first adult SFF novel, which comes out next year, so I'm very excited about that. And I am very proud about that because it took a lot of work, but I think it's going to be really great. So
yeah,
I am excited. What about you, Jen? What are you happy or proud of?
Man, there's actually been a lot of really good stuff happening this year, but unfortunately a lot of it I can't talk about yet because it can't be announced. But, I think that the thing I'm sort of most proud of is, you know, Marika spending so much time on the New York Times list because that was sort of like comically amazing. And then it just kept getting better because it just kept happening.
Yep.
And her sales have continued to be really good. And it just made me so happy that people were connecting with the book and that, you know, sales were strong, but they weren't like crazy. Like she didn't have, you know, sort of like wild expectations to fall from.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just really nice and steady and kind of like growing. And, you know, it just felt really good. Because she's also, you know, my perfect cinnamon roll, so I, you know, I want everything to be perfect for her, so. I mean, I want everything to be perfect for all my clients, but, you know, it was really exciting to see, you know.
It's always nice when the really good things happen to really lovely people.
Yeah, you know, it's just like, you, good job.
Yes.
I also signed some really rad people that I'm, like, delighted about, so.
Same,
yeah. So it's about 20 minutes in. It's probably going to be a shortish episode this time. I think we have a few questions. One second. I uninstalled Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr from my phone in the aftermath of the election. And it was awesome. I was like, I'm going to need that for stuff. Okay. Someone had a very helpful hint on, like, audio things. And I did not implement those, obviously, before I... came to record that today, but okay, messages. Mark S. Master, or Mark's Master, had a good suggestion, so thank you for your audio tips, which we got through Tumblr.
We'll do that next time.
We'll try that next time. Next time we'll try not to. Mm-hmm. Next time I'll try not to be quite so garbage. Okay, inbox. We have some questions from a bunch of cool shades anons. Okay. So this is a kind of long two-part question that I actually don't really know the answer to. Cool Shades Anon says, this may be a little out of your depth, but maybe you might know. I'm curious about copyright and whether slash how it applies to tweets. Lately, I've seen an influx of listicles made up mostly of reaction tweets. The listicles themselves have very little original contents, mostly their tweets copied and pasted in. Obviously, someone is making money on these pieces. If nothing else, the website's garnering web hits and ad revenue. I know that when it comes to song lyrics, blog posts, articles, essays, images, stories, the author retains ownership of the work, and though copying up to a certain percentage with attribution is allowed under fair use, to republish without being sued, you need to acquire a license slash relief from the author. But who owns a tweet? Twitter TOS states the author of the tweet retains ownership of the tweet. So if the tweet is copied without consent and no money is going to the author, isn't that an infringement? God, I have no idea.
Yeah, that's a really complicated issue. Because a lot of it is generally also regarded as, like, not exactly public domain, but available
public for public use. I mean, I think of it as, you know, sort of like public, like a speech almost.
Yeah.
You know, if you make a speech somewhere, you can, like, quote from it. Like, you own it,
yeah. But people can...
quote from it, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the listicle thing is, like, obviously kind of garbage, but, you know, that's sort of the world we live in. I don't have an answer to this. So
I don't either.
If it's a private tweet, you absolutely own it. Like if it's a DM and it was meant to be private, or if it was something that you tweeted from a protected account, like, then you absolutely own it and either need to be paid or they need to dig it down.
Yeah.
Because that's private. But if you have it set to public, I don't really know.
Yeah. I don't know. It's because it's, you know, it is sort of different from copying wholesale a blog or a blog post or, like, an article from the internet.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Sorry, Anon. I wish we could be more helpful. I just realized I went a little bit further back into our message history, and someone said, any chance we can have a new podcast in time for the election so we don't have to face the harsh light of Wednesday alone? I'm very sorry.
Yeah.
But I was crying into several bottles of wine. With my mom.
Yep.
Okay. TLDR. Too long didn't read, for those of you who don't know. When is it time to stop querying a manuscript? Long version. I finished several books and barely missed the mark with each. Partials and fulls, R&Rs, phone calls, but never got signed. After the first three, I gave myself a time frame of a year to query future books. I'm coming to the end of the 90-day period of the last partial. My year's up in February, and I'm getting nervous. I love this book. Should I self-pub? What do? I'm guessing that means what do I do? I have another project with beta readers and one more in draft. I mean, if you've gotten close, I see no reason not to keep trying.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like you actually have had people responding to your material. Yeah. So
there's something there.
There's something there. And, you know, deadlines, too, like, those are tough because so much of that is not under your control.
Exactly.
Like, what if you get a call in, like, a year plus one or, like, a year plus 2 months or something? Like,
I would say rather than setting a time deadline, set sort of, like, an attempt deadline. So, like, if you reach a point where you can't find any other agents who would be a good fit for it or who you would like to have represent you.
Or, like, the list of people that you wanted to have represent you has all come back and they've all had the same feedback, then...
Yeah. But, yeah, I wouldn't say, like, if at a year you're like, well, there are still these other people who might be interested, but I can't try them because a year has passed. I don't think that that is the right way to approach it. As long as there are people who might like it, go for it and keep working on your other things as well.
Yeah. Another thing too is, like, it sounds like you've queried, like, a bunch of different projects and have, like, a bunch in sort of in the pipeline. Like, this might actually be a time to, like, slow down and maybe workshop one of the things you have working on or finish several books, barely miss the mark with each. I mean, several to me says more than three or, like, 2 to 3. So maybe it's that you need to, take a look at, you know, your craft, you know, what's going on with your critique group, like, what kind of feedback are you getting, what are the R&Rs saying, you know, maybe it's time to sort of, like, slow down, kind of go back to the drawing board and, like, really concentrate on making one of them, maybe going, like, a couple of steps further with one of your new projects than you would have gone before you start the query process. Does that make sense?
Yeah. See what you can do to bring it to the next level before you send it out.
Because I know that we give the advice to, you know, always be writing something new, mm-hmm. so that when something's out on submission, you're not just sitting there fallow. But I think that there is sort of this mentality that can happen where, like, people are like, if I'm not working on something new all the time,
yeah,
and if I don't have something new, like, completely ready once the last one is done querying, then I'm not doing it right. Like, it's possible to go too far in the other direction.
Yeah. And, you know, this might be an instance where if you can afford it, you might look into hiring a freelance editor. Just someone who, and look for, like, don't just go for anyone, but look for someone who's really good, and who really knows the area you're working in. And see if, even if they just do, like, 50 pages or something, see if there's something new that they can teach you, something new you can learn from them. And that might be the thing to take it over the line. Or you can apply for, like, fellowships, mentorships, that sort of thing. Just try to figure out, get some new input from someone.
Yeah, yeah. New input, I think, is a good idea. Good job, team. So, last one in our inbox on Tumblr, another Cool Shades and On says, my agent quit agenting. At first, I wanted to dive back into querying, and I even drafted letters to a few other agents who either offered rep or critiques that I feel have been addressed in subsequent drafts. So people that they turned down for the first round. But I haven't completed my second book yet, and while my first is still technically out with several editors, it seems to be dead in the water. Not the most enticing package to present to agents. But am I in trouble if anything comes of those subs and I have no rep, or should I wait and query my next book?
So this will probably be covered in your agency agreement. If your agent was the only person
at the agency, then, and the agency is no longer,
then you're in a little bit more of a complicated position. but if there are other people at the agency, you can confirm that you've left the agency, and then go back to them, because they will probably have, based on your agency agreement, the right to handle any contracts initiated by editors they submitted to.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I would say definitely finish the new project, send it out to them, say, I used to have an agent, they left agenting, especially if it was someone you worked, who liked it previously, say, you liked my manuscript or this thing about my manuscript on this date, I'm now a free agent, would you like to take a look at my new project?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. I concur.
Thanks, Jen.
Let me check the email real quick.
Also, if your agent left agenting and didn't either warn or withdraw from the editors it was submitted to, that's no good. Just
then you are well shot of that person. So it doesn't look like we have any questions on the inbox. And I didn't tweet saying that we were recording, so I don't think we have any on Twitter. So, Bridget, what are you reading?
Well, I just finished, or am currently finishing, Possession by A.S.
Yeah!
Which is amazing.
Oh my god, it's so good! Oh my god, it's so good. And actually, I really like the adaptation, too, with Gwyneth Paltrow and Aaron, what's his face?
Interesting. I don't think I knew that was who was in it.
His chin looks like a butt, and it's really unfortunate, but they play the modern couple, and then Jennifer Eale and Jeremy Northam play the past people.
Okay.
It's real good.
I was sort of expecting something very different. I don't know what I was thinking, but it's a lot sweeter and a lot sadder.
Yeah.
Than I thought it was going to be. It is really interesting to see the way it deals with.
Oh my god, I just realized your microphone is turned all the way around.
Oh. That explains why this hasn't been working.
Guys, we're doing really well.
I did my terrible thing for the night. Good job, self.
Well, I hope that this is usable. We'll see.
Turn this down. We'll find out a little bit. It's been showing up.
Yeah,
it's been recording.
You're just going to sound really tinny and weird. Oh my god. Oh, I was like, why is that Audio Technica? Oh, fuck.
Well,
oh my god.
The end. Let's all just go home.
Anyway, it's been really interesting in Possession to see how they deal with issues of, like, autonomy and perception.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do we have the right to read about these, to read these letters, and seeing what his wife does with them, and, like, which one she keeps and what she burns and all of that is really interesting. And it's it's an ethical quandary. But it's, I'm also, you know, a deeply curious person. So I'm like, I really want to know.
I love that book. I haven't read it in forever. I'll add that to my reread it someday list.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's kind of slow going. Partly, maybe I just noticed this because it has really long chapters. So I'm like, I'm just going to read one more chapter. I'm going to finish this chapter and then go to sleep. And I'm like, oh, dear God, this chapter is 40 pages long. When is it going to end? But I also, like, get really into it and don't want to stop reading.
Nice. Since it's been, a while since we've recorded, what would you say that was your favorite book that you read since we last recorded?
Oh, God. Let me check my Goodreads. I don't know. So when did we last record?
Oh, my God. Like 1,000 years ago. Before the election.
Yeah, that's for sure. I really loved Georgia Peaches and Other Forbidden Fruit by J. Robin Brown, which is a YA contemporary about a lesbian girl in Atlanta whose father is like a famous radio preacher.
Oh.
Who is very supporting of her and like, and she's out and he accepts her and loves her and everything. But he marries a woman from a small town in Georgia whose family is not cool with it. And so they move out to this, like, small town for her senior year of high school, and her father's like, you know, maybe it would just be, it would be easier for you this year if you were not out, which is kind of garbage, but also kind of, like,
sensible. Necessary.
Yeah. But then she falls in love with a girl in this small town, and it's deeply adorable. This was an incredibly charming romance. I was like, this is just so cute. So I really enjoyed that. It is also unexpectedly sexy. There's like, it's I was not expecting it to go quite as far as it did. I was thinking it was going to, you know, either be a little bit more chaste
or like fade to black.
Yeah. And I was kind of like, oh, okay,
we're going there.
We're going there.
Okay.
This is YA. What are you doing? But I do highly recommend it. I was very charmed by it. It's absolutely the kind of book I would like to represent. So if you have written something similar, send it to me.
Cool.
What about you, Jen?
I've been on, like, a weird kick of borrowing a lot. I just, like, 10 years later than everyone else in the land, discovered Overdrive, which, if you don't know, is a system through which you can rent ebooks through your library.
Yep.
And I've been going hog fucking wild. Like, I have read so many, like, weird books in the last 3 weeks. A lot of them aren't on my phone anymore, but I also, like, after the election sort of went down this rabbit hole of, like, I need to, like, educate myself, and so I, like, my friend sort of put together this sort of, like, reading list, and, like, the only things that were available from the library at the time were Hannah Arendt's Eichmann in Jerusalem and Martha Gellhorn's The Face of War, which I was like, oh my god,
why
decisions. But in the meantime, I've also read a couple of books I really loved. I read an MM historical, like a male historical romance that I found so perfect. It was, like, everything I want from a historical romance. It had the exact right tone. It was really great. It's called The Soldier's Scoundrel. It's by Kat Sebastian, and it's from Harper, like, Avon. And then I also read another romance called, it's called, I think, Falling into Bed with a Duke, which is not a good title, but it's by Lorraine Heath, and it's really charming.
Okay.
Where the protagonist is, like, 27, so she's, like, aware that she's kind of, like, on the shelf And she's had like a million seasons and her family's really...
She's so old.
I know. I know. It makes me want to die. Like, it makes me want to kill myself.
It's always fun to reread Pride and Prejudice and realize that they're implying she's possibly a little too old to get married and she's not yet 1 in 20. I'm like, fuck everything! What? Why?
But so this girl is, you know, she's aware that she's like on the shelf and she's got like a huge dowry. So the only guys that come after her are like clearly fortune hunters.
Gold diggers.
And she's just like, you know, it may be that I never get married, but I want to hear what this sex stuff that everyone, I want to experience what this sex stuff everyone talks about is. And so she goes to this like secret club for like women who want to have sex with people without people knowing and like meets this guy and like, it's so good. I'm reading another one of hers that I don't like as much right now, but the things that I've been reading in the last couple of days that I really loved is I went on a weird like Shirley Jackson binge.
I read
The Haunting of Hill House, which I got at the Drinklings holiday party.
Nice.
And then I read We Have Always Lived in the Castle, which I thought I had read before, but I think I read Hangs a Man, which is like another one of hers.
I have never read her, so I need to.
The Haunting of Hill House is possibly my favorite book of this year. Like, I'm not obviously of this year, but like, it's so good. Like, and then like the night that I finished reading it, I watched the really awful 1999 movie adaptation starring Liam Neeson. I'm just like, what is happening right now?
Well, they're currently filming an adaptation of We Have Always Lived in the Castle.
Oh, yeah, and Sebastian Stan plays Cousin Charles, which one of the people I follow on Tumblr, like, the hashtag that she has for, like, the movie is, like, pay no attention to me in my bag full of hammers. Like, it's like, yep. But, yeah, that's a weird. It's gonna be a weird movie.
Yeah, because
there's no way to give that sort of like a traditional Hollywood happy ending.
No,
you know.
Yeah.
Have you read that one?
I haven't.
It's about these two reclusive sisters who live in this big house, like the biggest house in town, with their uncle Julian, who is, you know, very infirm and has been for 6 years ever since everyone else in the family died of poisoning, and the older sister was tried and acquitted for the murder because she does all the cooking, so they assume that she did it. But it's narrated by the younger sister, who has this sort of very strange outlook on life, and she distrusts Charles, Cousin Charles, immensely when he comes to visit, because theoretically the family had all this money, and he's like there. Mm. He's clearly there to like find all the money. But the book ends, spoiler alert, by the villagers like burning down their house. The house burns down, but then like, they put out the fire, and then they destroy it with rocks. Like, it's like a whole thing. I was just like, oh, my God. But they're, like, together and happy in the end, but, like, also living in, like, two rooms of their burned-out, like, husk of a home.
So it's like the dark twin of I Capture the Castle?
Yes. Yes, basically. And now, just, you know, for funsies, I'm reading this book called... I forget how I found this review, or I found this author, but someone was like, oh, so and so is the author of The Life You Save May Be Your Own, which is a book about four mid-century Catholic writers, Flannery O'Connor, Dorothy Day, Walker Percy, and Thomas Merton.
Okay.
And they like were correspondents and all very sort of like Catholic revivalists in like the post-war era. It's interesting. It's very slow.
Yeah,
but
I'm also
I have not read any of, I think, I'm pretty sure I've read Flannery O'Connor, but
I must have at some point.
Oh yeah, she wrote the one about A Good Man Is Hard to Find.
Okay.
The one about the old woman who is like on the vacation and gets murdered. It's like a short story.
Oh, I haven't read it.
Oh my god, it was like a staple of my English classes. I think I had to read it like once a year for like 4 years. But yeah, that's my reading since it happened.
Since we last met.
Yes. Yeah. So we probably won't record again for the rest of the year, but, you know, one of the great things about this year has been seeing this podcast get, like, a higher, you know, we've had higher numbers every month, so clearly people are responding to it. You know, I just want to thank you guys for bearing with us, even through our long absences.
Yes.
So we'll try and do better next year. But in the meantime, you know, hope you have a great holiday season.
Yes.
Um,
here's hoping next year is better than this year.
Yeah. I've just been listening to that song by the Mountain Goats, like on repeat. The I'm gonna make it through this year if it kills me. It's like it might kill me, actually.
Yeah.
So on that slightly depressing note, thank you for everything, and we will see you in 2017.
Yay!
Bye. Bye.